So reading from the Srimad Bhagavatam, Canto 10, Chapter 12, The Killing of Agasura, we're on text number 35.
That celebration performed
by the demigods in the upper planetary system. Adbhuta, wonderful. Strotra, prayers. Suvadya, glorious musical sounds of drums and other instruments. Gitika, celestial songs. Jaya Adi, sounds of Jai, etc. Naeka Utsava, celebration simply for glorifying the Supreme Personality of Godhead. Mangala Swanan, transcendental sounds auspicious for everyone. Shrutva, hearing such sounds. Swadhamna, from his abode. Adi, anti, nearby. Aja, Lord Brahma. Agata, coming there. Achirat, very soon. Drishva, singing. Mahi, the glorification. Ishasya, of Lord Krishna. Jagama Vishmayam, became astonished. Translation and purport by His Divine Grace, A.C. Bhaktivedanta Swami Srila Prabhupada. When Lord Brahma heard the wonderful ceremony going on near his planet, accompanied by music and songs and sounds of Jai Jai, he immediately came down to see the function. Upon seeing so much glorification of Lord Krishna, he was completely astonished. Purport. Here the word anti means near, indicating that even in the higher planetary systems, near Brahmaloka, like Maharloka, Janaloka, and Tapaloka, the festival of glorification of Lord Krishna was going on. Text 36. King Parikshit, when the python-shaped body of Agasura dried up into merely a big skin, it became a wonderful place for the inhabitants of Vrindavan to visit, and it remained so for a long, long time. It's been quite an amusement park. What's that? Yes. This incident of Krishna's saving himself and his associates from death and giving deliverance to Agasura, who assumed the form of python, took place when Krishna was 5 years old. It was disclosed in Vrajabhumi after 1 year as if it had taken place on that very day. Purport, the word mokshanam means liberation. For the associates of Krishna and for Krishna himself, there is no question about liberation. They are already liberated being in the spiritual world. In the material world, there are birth, death, old age, and disease. But in the spiritual world, there is no such things because everything is eternal. As for the python, however, by the association of Krishna and his devotees, Agasura also achieved the same facility of eternal life. Therefore, as indicated here by the word Atmahi Mokshanam, if the python Agasura could receive eternal association with the Supreme Personality of Godhead, what is to be said of those who are already associates of the Lord? Sukham Vijaru Krita Punja Puncha. Bhagavatam 10, 12, 11. Here is the proof that God is good for everyone. Even when he kills someone, the one who is killed attains liberation. What then is to be said of those who are already in the association of the Lord? Krishna is the cause of all causes. The causes and effects of the material world, both higher and lower, are all created by the Supreme Lord, the original controller. When Krishna appeared as the son of Maharaj, Nanda Maharaj in Jasoda, he did so by his causeless mercy. Consequently, for him to exhibit his unlimited opulence was not at all wonderful. Indeed, he showed such mercy that even Agasura, the most sinful miscreant, was elevated to being one of his associates and achieving Swarupya Mukti, which is already impossible, which is actually impossible for materially contaminated persons to obtain. Purport. The word Maya is also used in connection with love. Out of Maya, love, a father has affection for his child. Therefore, the word Mayina indicates that Krishna, out of love, appeared as the son of Nanda Maharaj and assumed the form of a human child. Manu Jaraba. Krishna is the cause of all causes. He is the creator of cause and effect, and he is the supreme controller. Nothing is impossible for him. Therefore, that he enabled even a living being like Agasura to attain the salvation of Swarupya Mukti was not at all wonderful for Krishna. Krishna took pleasure in entering the mouth of Agasura in a sporting spirit along with his associates. Therefore, when Agasura, by that sporting association, was as maintained in the spiritual world, was purified of all contamination, he attained Swarupya Mukti and Vimukti by the grace of Krishna. For Krishna, this was not at all wonderful. Namo Vishnu Vidaya Krishna Pristaya Bhutai Srimate Bhakti Vedanta Swami Tanamane Namaste Sarasvatam Deve Gauravani Pracharane Nirvishesha Shunivadi Pasvetyade Satarne. So this theme is continuing on, that Krishna is all good. For most people, it is very difficult to understand that if Krishna is all good, then why so many bad things are going on in the world? If Krishna is all good, why doesn't he stop all these bad things? And then again, they look at Krishna's life, and as I mentioned before, it doesn't seem like even his life was all good. As I mentioned, his parents were in jail when he was born. In other words, they were criminals. And somehow or another, they escaped with, at least his father escaped with him, and then his father kidnapped a little girl. Heartlessly kidnapped this little girl and took her to the prison to be sacrificed. And then Krishna, coming from such a background, started his life of crime at a very early age. Some poor lady came, offered her breast milk, and he killed her. Then he began to kill the animals in the forest, birds and snakes and horses and cows and calves. Anything he got his hands on, he killed. And then he organized a grand band of thieves going around robbing everyone. And even at a young age, he became lusty after all the girls in the village. And as soon as they became serious, he fled the village and started his same nefarious activities in other places. Killing and chasing after women, and even his whole dynasty was so corrupt that at the end they all became intoxicated and wound up killing each other. So this is a person who's supposed to be all good. His life is practically all bad. So, if he's God, how is it, if he was all good, that his life is bad and he hasn't corrected all the social injustices that are going on in the world. So, of course, they come up with different theories, like why do bad things happen to good people? So one rabbi came up with the idea that perhaps God is a good person, but he's so old that he's become senile. And because he's become senile, he can't really keep track of things very well. Therefore, many anomalies happen, and even bad things happen to good people, and good things happen to bad people. But the rumor is that he's so old that eventually the old man will retire, and maybe one of the other angels will take over, and things will go better in the future. So this is the speculation. And of course, because in modern society, people are very limited in their understanding of reality, just like there was some priest who claims he's exorcised hundreds of people. He said that the real demon is yoga. Yoga was invented by Satan because it comes from Hinduism, where they believe in the demoniac philosophy of reincarnation. So because they've rejected the idea of reincarnation, they rejected the idea of karma, therefore, what kind of God do they have left with? A God who just arbitrarily does whatever he feels like it, or he's just so spaced out he doesn't know what's going on. So either they have a vicious, satanical God, sadistic God, who sometimes tortures little children, another time makes mafia kings billionaires. Or you have someone who's just spaced out, doesn't know what's going on, although somehow or another he's supposed to be God, but he just doesn't come up to the qualification yet, or if he ever will. So the real thing is, Krishna explains in Bhagavad Gita, is that one has to understand things from a multi-dimensional point of view in order to understand the justice that goes on in this world. First of all, no one complains in a movie. Say you were watching a James Bond movie, which we're not recommending in this class, but say you were watching a James Bond movie where so many people are being killed. You may ask, what is the justice behind all these people being killed in the movie? But at the end of the day, when you walk out of the movie theater, you don't go into a whole investigation why these people were killed, because you know it was just a movie. So certainly, although it appears that so many people are being harassed in this world, and certainly they are, but after all, the soul, who is the real person, he's actually not being harassed in the sense that he's eternal and nothing can actually change his qualification of eternity. Certainly he'll be afflicted by different types of miseries if he's in the wrong circumstances, materially speaking. But those things are only temporary. And therefore, and if we can see the justice behind it, and if we can see the reason behind it, namely that everything in the world is a attempt to equalize the violations of the laws of nature that people are causing, either in this life or in past lives. People are simply getting awarded their reactions to their activities, either pious or impious. And the idea is either to encourage people to make further progress towards pious activities or to cease from their sinful activities, which are causing their present suffering. But of course, if people don't realize it, if they're not given the intelligence and the perspective to view things properly, then of course they won't learn. Prabhupada said an intelligent person, he can learn by hearing, and a person who's not so intelligent, he has to learn by experience. And someone with no intelligence, he won't learn. So because people aren't educated into seeing things properly, practically they don't learn. Just like a dog, he may come to your table trying to get something to eat, and if you take a newspaper and hit him over the head with a newspaper, he'll certainly run away. But 5 minutes later, his senses take control of him again, and once again, he comes to the table to try to get something to eat. And although he may be repeatedly struck with a newspaper, his memory isn't so good, his desires are so strong, that he comes time and time again trying to fulfill the desires of his tongue. Because he has no intelligence. No one's going to teach this dog, "My dear dog, you're a fool. Why don't you learn your lesson and try to control your senses?" No one will explain that to the dog. Of course, they're trying to teach the dog by hitting him, but because he's less intelligent, he doesn't learn. He thinks that he can't connect between trying to get the food and getting hit on the head. It's just some temporary inconvenience, some obstacle in his attempt to get the food. And he may not even connect it. He just think, "Oh, to somehow or another, I get hit on the head once in a while. I don't know why." So we're getting hit on the head. We don't connect it with our activities or what we're supposed to be doing, what we're not supposed to be doing. We just go on blindly trying to fulfill our desires, and we don't connect the dots that show us that getting hit on the head is part of the process of sense gratification. But Krishna tries to explain that in Bhagavad Gita, that he says that maya tatamidam sarvam jagara avyakta murtina matstani sarvabhutani na chaham teshu vashtitaha. That in my impersonal aspect, my impersonal form, I pervade all this creation. Everything rests on me, but I'm not actually present there. Nichamatani karmani, nichamatani bhutani, paishame yogamaisharam, bhuta brinna cha bhutasto, amatma bhuta bhavanaha. Again, although I am the source of everything and everything rests in me, that still I'm not part of this creation. So this is almost inconceivable. Or Krishna says it's yogamaisvara, it's my inconceivable opulence that I can maintain everything and everything depends upon me, but still I'm completely aloof from everything that's going on because it's not within our realm of experience. Then Krishna says, although it's inconceivable, I'll give you an example. Yata kasha sito nityam vayu saratra gomahan tata sarvani bhutani matstani tupadarya. That just like the air is blowing everywhere, but still it rests in ethereal space, so know that in the same way all the creation is resting in me. So though Krishna is everywhere and in charge of everything, still he's actually not part of what's going on. Then Krishna explained that I create the creation, this material universe, again and again I annihilate it, but all this work cannot bind me, I'm ever detached, see, there's no neutral. That he's simply here as the judge, watching, observing what everyone is doing, and then making the arrangement to fulfill their desires according to what they deserve. But still, he's not part of the whole theater that's going on. He's simply here as the facilitator to give the living entities the opportunity to fulfill their desires to become the lords of creation, to try to enjoy here, and giving them different opportunities to do so in different species of life. But he's simply neutral. When he gets the opportunity to give his opinion, he says, "Give it all up and surrender to me." But people are attached to being here. They're attached to their drama. They take it very seriously. They don't believe that there is a controller. They don't believe that this is a spiritual world. They don't believe in karma. They don't believe in reincarnation. They just believe in whatever rights and what is in right in front of their eyes or their nose that they believe in. And even if what they're doing will actually bring them to the darkest regions of ignorance, they don't really believe in it. So therefore, they don't accept it. They can't learn, nor do they, most people, have any interest in learning. The only thing they want to learn is how to make more money and enjoy their senses more. Therefore, they're simply on the level of the animal kingdom. And such animals, if they're asked to give their opinion about God, why there's injustice in the world, obviously they're simply going to bark because they have nothing better to say. They have no knowledge, they have no experience, they have no reference point. They can't understand that actually they're the cause of their own problems. And the principal cause of their problems is their inability or unwillingness to accept the supremacy of the Supreme Lord, and therefore their repeated attempt to try to imitate Krishna in this material world in an imaginary dress called their body, and fruitlessly, time after time, trying to establish their little kingdom or empire here in different ways, and having that empire being washed away by the sands of time, by the waves of time. Just like little children, they build their sandcastles on the beach, and they imagine themselves to be the kings and queens of the sandcastle. But everyone knows in the course of time, when the waves come in, the whole thing will be washed away, and their parents will take them to another place. Therefore, although we may try to set up our little kingdoms here and have our little plans for godship for some period of time, still, ultimately, all these little plans are all washed away by the waves of time. And then we're taken to another place. And since we were a failure the last time, and since time immemorial, you'd think that we'd learn. But unfortunately, due to lack of knowledge and good association, people don't learn, but they simply transmigrate from one species of life to another in their attempt to become, in their godship project, which is never fulfilled. So this is not Krishna's fault. It's our causeless unwillingness to accept our actual position, the actual position of the Supreme Person, and our futile attempt to take his position, and therefore causing ourselves and others undue, well, useless struggle against an imaginary enemy we call the material energy, always to be defeated. Mogaishva, mokha karmano, mokha jnana vichetasa. Rakshasim asrim chaiva prakatim mohinim shritaha. As long as they don't accept Krishna, their hopes for liberation, their fruit of activities, and their culture of knowledge will all be defeated by the illusory energy, by the material energy. Will simply cause them to transmigrate from one body to another. But actually, Krishna wants everyone to become liberated. Therefore, he comes and displays these pastimes to prove to us that he's so good that even one is his bitter enemy, somehow or another, if they come in contact with him, then they become benefited. That Krishna is just like fire. Whoever enters into fire will become hot, whether you're a good person or a bad person. So Krishna will purify anyone who comes in contact with him. Therefore, the most suspicious thing is to give people the correct philosophy about God, and at the same time, the ability to associate with him, either through transcendental literature or through the holy names of Krishna. That's the best benefit we can give to ourselves and others, give them the ultimate good. Otherwise, everything else ultimately is actually bad. However much it may be advertised as good, ultimately it doesn't do us any permanent benefit, although it may temporarily solve some insignificant problem, relatively insignificant. It won't really solve our ultimate problem, which is our lack of realization of our actual identity and our forcing to be taking different illusory identities, to be take part in different illusory activities, which are ultimately not beneficial for ourselves or anyone else. So I'll stop there. Any questions, comments? Yes.
Thank you for the very clarifying class. Maharaj, and the chanting, our practice is the chanting of the holy name. And my question is that how much can we actually depend on the holy name to satisfy all of our desires?
Not at all.
in other words, you know, that's probably the biggest obstacle that we're facing in this process, that we're lacking a faith, or we're feeling that we need to do something else to, you know, maintain ourselves or to, you know, fulfill our desires.
Krishna is not here to fulfill our desires. Therefore, we want to fulfill our desires, and there's another process to do that. It's called work hard. Not that all those desires will be fulfilled by just working hard. It'll depend upon our previous karma, whether those desires in this life deserve to be satisfied or will be satisfied. But Krishna consciousness is something different. It's not to fulfill our desires, it's to fulfill Krishna's desires. So we want to work on fulfilling our desires. That's a project we've been doing since time immemorial, unsuccessfully. But more successfully will be if we try to satisfy Krishna's desires. Then the idea is, if we do that, if Krishna's desires are satisfied, then we'll forget about all our desires. In that way, they'll be satisfied.
But my question is that, you know, that seems to lead to a very impersonalistic mentality. In other words, the devotee just becomes desireless, like a non-entity.
My desire is to serve Krishna. Anyhow, it's not very much different from what we're already doing. We're the soul within the body. We're desiring to serve the dead body. So we've taken this body as our worshipable deity, and we're serving it very nicely. So we're just switching it from a dead body to a living person, namely Krishna. So we have to be, we're servants either of a dead body or of a living person who gives us all pleasure. We serve the dead body, it simply tortures us. And we serve Krishna, his desires, and we become full of happiness and pleasure and enlightenment.
But people would argue that more than a dead body, everyone within that dead body is a conscious person.
Yes, but that's so, the conscious person is now spending his time serving a dead body. Dead body and a dead subtle mind and conception of life, illusory conception. He's serving illusion and mistaken desires and senses. He's completely absorbed in loving these things. But they simply give him old age, disease, and death, and ultimately all kinds of misery in return for all his service. But if he serves Krishna, then Krishna will give him spiritual happiness, enlightenment eternally.
But that seems to be the fulfillment of desire. In other words, to see Krishna as beautiful, to reciprocate.
Yes, we're not against desire, but our desire should be spiritual rather than material, that's all. We're not trying to kill desire, we're trying to properly utilize it.
Thank you. Thank you very much.
Anything else?
Hare Krishna Maharaj Ji. I was reading Srimad Bhagavatam, Canto 2, Chapter 9, and I read that a person who at the same time tried to be devotee and same time have material attachment is a foolish devotee. Foolish devotee, that's the statement. And then it's said that the goal of the human life is basically finances. Brahma was not even able to create this material world without going through the process of finances.
Penances.
Yeah. So I want to understand that what exactly that means.
Penances?
Yeah.
Means follow four regular principles and chant 16 rounds a day. Tapasya. And the whole aim of that is that we can actually learn how to hear nicely. Surrender to Krishna. Hear from Krishna and then follow his instructions. That's penance. Tapasya. Brahma, he sat on the lotus flower and concentrated his mind so he could hear Krishna's what tapa meant. So we have to concentrate our minds on Krishna's instructions and then carry that with our body, mind, and words, and that's called penance, tapasya.
But still there will be material attachment.
If you want, we can remain materially attached as long as we want, but there's a possibility gradually that those material attachments will be given up and we'll develop spiritual attachments instead. If we can't keep on chanting the mantra, there'll be material attachments. No matter what happens, I'm not giving up my material attachments. If we keep on convincing ourselves like that, then we won't make any progress because we're convincing ourselves, we're attached to that idea. It's like the bird in the cage. They open the bird walks out, walks around for a little while, and then he walks back into the cage and his master closes the cage. He can fly away, but he doesn't want to, he's attached to the cage. So we want to remain attached to the material world, we can stay here forever, chanting the mantra. There'll always be material attachments. And if we want to go back to the spiritual world, we can. It's only, we have to make a decision what we want to do. Anything else?
Maharaj, when we explain this philosophy to others, it seems to be critical on the point of death. In other words, it's great to just enjoy your senses and to, you know, just run around and do whatever you want, whenever you want to.
Well, do whatever the mind and senses dictate to you.
Okay, of course. yes, thank you for clarifying. But the point is that ultimately you're faced with death. So my question is that, how important is it for us practicing Krishna consciousness to really consider our death or to consider the element of death in life?
Well, Prabhupada writes in the Bhagavad Gita, without birth, death, old age, and disease, and understanding the miseries accompany them, there is no impetus to make progress in spiritual life. So these are our impetuses for us to make progress. Otherwise, we just sit around just gossip all day.
You know, Marsh, people, when you explain this philosophy, they'll ask, but what benefit does this kind of do for society? In other words, you don't seem to do anything. You just sit around and read philosophy and chant the holy name, and, you know, they don't, what practical benefit is this kind of offering to society, you know, in the world today, extended society?
Well, for one, it can help society stop their sinful activities. Number two, it can help enlighten them to what the purpose of life is. And number three, it can help them achieve the goal of life. It can help anyone who wants to go back to the spiritual world and live an eternal life full of bliss and knowledge. So try to get that at Kmart.
Thank you very much.
Thank you very much. And Grantarai Srimad Bhagavatam Ki Jai. Srila Prabhupada Ki Jai. Gaur Premanande.